Welcome to Bengals Scribe Session, presented by JosephOtto.com and Inquirer Sports. Here, your Bengals beat writers escort you inside the walls of Carl Brown Stadium to hear the news, analysis, and observations unfolding within the team from those documenting it daily. All with the sidecar of snark and absurdity you've come to expect. Let's go. We're about to start a party in here. He's made strums and guitar in here. Looks like we got a good crowd in here. Turn it up to 10 and get lively.
Ball got it. Ball the ball out. Is out. Ball's the Bengals out. Have scooped ball's it up. Out. Terrence yeah. Newman running back yeah. to the 30, yeah. 20, yeah. 10, yeah. 5, touchdown.
Up in the air.
Oh,
AJ Green makes the catch.
Oh man!
A deflected ball winds up in the hands of AJ Green as the clock hits zero.
All right, welcome to the latest edition of Scribe Session. I'm Paul Daner Jr. coming to you live from inside enemy territory.
Literally
inside. Inside Paul Brown Stadium offices from the fresh office of Jeff Butchie Hobson of Bengals.com, who's kind enough to join us. We're under the watchful eyes of JFK. Yeah,
unbelievable, isn't it? That photo hung in the post office of Waldboro, Maine, where my grandmother was the postmaster.
Really?
Yeah, and that was hanging. Obviously, she had to take it down after November 22nd.
Yes.
And I ended up with it.
But here he is, still just reminding you.
That's right.
How you need to be acting.
Yeah, exactly right.
He's your moral compass.
Yeah, well, I think I'm bearing every burden.
Yeah.
Not any burden.
Butchie, it's great to have you joining us. We've done this a couple of times before, and it seems like as good a time as any. With the storm is right in front of us now, as we've rehashed last season enough. We've been to the combine and seen what the draft is going to have to offer, and now we are entering on free agency and a time that maybe in the past we would have said this wasn't the most important time. We'd have said 2 weeks before the draft was the most important time, but this year is a little different around here, where there is a little bit more stress by everyone being put on free agency, and because of the fact that they're not going to be losing many major free agents, unlike last year where, you know, Michael Johnson, Anthony Collins leave and they get compensatory picks in return. Now there's a lot of reasons to be active in free agency and spots to fill. I guess when you talk about where this, have you noticed that? First of all, I mean, we were in Mobile together. You and I, we were up in the combine together. We've talked to a lot of guys, coaches, players, and everybody. Have you gotten the same feel that I have, that there's maybe even a consideration of possibly doing what rarely happens around here, and that's opening the pocketbook a little further and being active even early in free agency?
I do, and I think you've been all over this the last couple of weeks with some of the stuff you've written, like about how they've got nine out of their top 15 players
up
between this year and next. And I agree with you. I do, but I don't know. I don't think they're going to stray from their strategy, which is, don't give out the big bucks. Mm-hmm. I could see them wrapping up a lot of maybe more of the regular medium. You know, what we call the Tier B, Tier C free agents.
Yeah.
I could see perhaps maybe getting more of those.
Yeah.
I could also see a really concerted effort to get guys like Marvin Jones,
yes.
Mohamed Sanu, those guys who are up so that they're not in a situation like they are this year with Clint Bowling.
Yeah.
So I think I don't think we're going to see the Greg Hardys for a number of reasons. I thought we might a couple weeks ago, but now since Hardys deal seems to be getting even murkier and murkier.
Yeah.
I don't see it. And I just think they're committed to this. We are not going to go out and get undressed in the first two or three days. But after
right.
that, I think it's anybody. I think they're in the thing.
I feel like there are going to be some uncomfortable conversations had.
I agree.
When over the first couple of days, let's say there's a list of six guys. Because let's be honest. We're talking about a defensive lineman.
Right.
And finding a guy who can be what Michael Johnson was to this team, which was a starter who can be disruptive and effective and play a ton of snaps
yeah.
and make the whole rotation work. I mean, I think we can admit last year And like I said, we're not going to rehash last year too much again, but they missed that. That was what it forced everyone into uncomfortable positions they didn't want to be in.
Right.
Now, if they want to go and find a guy who can be disruptive and effective. And at that position, defensive tackle, defensive end, in this league, you have to pay for them. And so you got to come to terms with the fact that you're either not going to get a guy that can be what you need, or you have to maybe you do have to overpay every once in a while if you're going to go for it. If you're going to say, we got all these guys coming up next year, we've got a good squad here, let's go really go after it and make a run. Maybe you just say, suck it up and get the one major piece that you need, which is the defensive line starter. It's one or the other. And I think there will be conversations had inside this building, maybe right next to us. I don't know. Maybe they're happening now. Should you stray from company policy, essentially, and maybe in this rare circumstance, you should overpay for it. And I'm not talking Sue. I'm not talking $50 million guaranteed.
Right.
I'm talking maybe, you know, your Hardys or stuff like that. A group of about four or five guys.
Right. Yeah, I think that is a conversation that has to be had. I just don't see them straying from it. Now, if they can get one of those guys next week, I mean, in 2 weeks, if they get one of them in 2 weeks, I can see that happening. But I just can't see them, because they look at this stuff and they'll tell you, they'll say, you know, Lamar Woodley just got whacked by the Raiders, you know, and they'll go down the list. And I think you did a good piece not too long ago about how the top two free agents at every position, they just didn't do a whole hell of a lot.
They didn't do much, no.
You know, so I think they would almost prefer, okay, say you take a run at a Jabal Sheard or somebody like that. I don't know, I'm just throwing out a name. He's really a 3-4 guy, really more so. But, you know, he's a guy that they've had trouble blocking. And I think he would give you a little bit of what Mike Johnson did. But just say, take that guy, for example. I think they would prefer to not overpay him and to maybe get something with a Sanu or a Jones or a Zeitler.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Zeitler's playing near Pro Bowl caliber. But, again, that goes back to the same question I think that you're getting at is, look, when are you gonna break down a building? You know? And I think they would argue, well, look, if we get Jabal Sheard, that's not the, you know, he's not the key. So, you know, I think it's a dance these guys do, and I think they feel like they've built a good team within the constraints, and I think they feel like what's going to take them over the top is not these so-called pieces, but it's the play of Dalton and Green and Dunlap and the guys that they need to play in big moments, and how that translates into free agency. It's an interesting discussion.
It is an interesting discussion. Yeah. And I just feel like at some point, though, you know, and we saw this last year with New England.
Yeah.
They said, you know what? We'll do a weird deal of where we just do 2 years, basically one big year, and for Darrelle Revis, because we think he can be the game changer that we need.
Yeah.
And New England operates differently than this squad or many in the league.
Yeah.
But I think if you just talk about needing to, at some point in time, there is a rare time where it is worth it. I'm not saying two or three, but if you're going to just do one guy, and it seems to be a position where you could get someone who could be really effective there.
Yeah.
I think not saying that this helped Cleveland or anything, but, you know, a guy like Kruger, when they signed Kruger, a guy who you did pay him a lot, but he came in, he's been effective, and that's the type of guy that you need. And at some point in time, you say, well, everything we've been doing, that philosophy has gotten us only so far.
Right,
at some point, you've got to try to hit the home run, and maybe this is the time. I just feel like there's a lot of things at play there, and it makes a lot of people think about doing things they wouldn't, that they don't like.
Of course, I don't know if that guy's out there though either. Now, I don't know. That's kind of a. Now, I remember the last time they did this, and one of the reasons they haven't done it, I think, lately, is in 2008 and 2009. It just blew up on him with Antoine Odom and Antonio Bryant.
Yep.
And they spent a lot of money. They were right out there first wave with both guys.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what do we got to show for? The Antonio Bryant indoor facility. That was a tough blow. And Mike made note of that, I'll tell you that.
Absolutely.
You know, and, as he should have. And so I think what I think we might see is there might not be the bid to get one guy, But I think we're going to see a lot of different parts coming in and out
yeah.
at different prices. You know, I think we're going to see some. I think we're going to see a veteran tight end.
Definitely.
I think we're going to see a couple veteran linebackers.
Definitely.
I think we're going to see a veteran wideout. Mm-hmm. I mean, so I think we're going to see, and it's like we were talking about before, we were kind of laughing. This is miserable for the scribes
yeah.
because free agency moves happen whenever. And I think what's going to be tough for the scribes this year mm-hmm. is once this thing starts March 10th, I think we're going to be busy right up until the draft and right up, I say, until the first spring camp in mid-May. I think this is going to be a two-month process because I think guys are going to be getting cut, and it doesn't happen now, but it happens later. And I think their thinking is let's get proven guys that are either ascending or are at least, you know, healthy and have been around, but you know what you're going
to
get from
enough to give you another year or two. And then, you know, and a few of those names you mentioned, I mean, it's just the bloodbath will continue this week as teams all try to cut down the cap and eye ways to fit some of the guys that we're talking about onto their team. You know, a guy like A.J. Hawk gets released, who seems to be a nice fit here.
Yep.
You know, where a guy who you could get for probably a 2 to 3 year deal, three-year deal, and maybe you only get 1 year out of it, but it's one real productive or 2 years. You know, I think a guy like that is a great fit. But that's you're right. I mean, we have talked a lot about, and we've talked to all the guys that we've talked to as far as coaches and everybody here behind the scenes about what positions maybe are better filled through the draft and better filled with this team in particular in free agency. And I think what you mentioned, linebacker, tight end, defensive line. I think they need to get one of each of those from free agency, and then they can feel pretty free in the draft to go more of a best player available type of scenario.
I think they knew this at the beginning of last year. They still need a big backup tackle.
Yes.
They haven't been able to find one to back up, you know, Paco and Gino, basically, and Brandon. You know, they need that fourth guy because it still clearly is not the answer for them. You know, they sat him the last couple weeks, so I don't think they think he's the answer. So they've got to find a guy, and I think, you know, free agency would be a perfect spot for that.
And when you get the defensive end, you can move Gilberry inside more.
Yeah,
and he can help you out there as well.
But he might come through the draft.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And so that's the problem. If you put a lot of cabbage on a veteran defensive end, now you take yourself kind of out of that draft pick. Well, maybe you don't, but I think you probably do take yourself out of the draft pick. And you know,
so be it, as long as you fill the hole, though, right?
Yeah, right. That's right.
I mean, at the end of the day, as long as you filled that hole, because it's not like there wouldn't be guys that they could take at 21 at other positions, whether you're talking to me. I, personally, and I think there's a good debate that we can have, and we can delve more into this a little bit now and more when the draft comes closer, but the question will be, is that offensive lineman, that tackle of the future at 21
–
or is there a guy that you like that maybe we've seen the team do that in the past where they move back a couple spots because the guy they really like will probably be there and maybe add an extra mid-round pick in a deep draft? Is it Collins from LSU? Is it Clemmings from Pitt? Is it Andres Pete from Stanford? Is it one of these guys that you can plug in that this year you have Witt in his last year, Andre Smith in his last year, you have questions at guard possibly, depending on what happens with Clint Bowling, that could plug in, play any of those positions, even as a reserve, or maybe even start if you lost Bowling and you signed Lael Collins in the first round, you drafted
put him at guard.
Put him at guard, and then groom him. You repeat the Witt plan from 06, where he plays at guard, and then maybe he's the guy that eventually moves out to tackle at some point.
But you only do that if he can solve the defensive end position.
Right. To me, that's priority number one. You agree?
I do. You know what? But what bothers me about when there may be a guy sitting here, Will Clark.
Right.
We don't know anything about him. And to me, if that's the one downside of last year, is he took only 61 snaps.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of, to me, and you kind of hit on it earlier in the conversation, where this rotation was screwed up from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, they apparently did not have a lot of confidence in Margus and Will to take those snaps from Michael, and they gave them all to Robert and Gilberry, and it didn't work. And so now you're coming into the second year of Clark, and you don't know. I wonder if he's a guy. I mean, is he Michael? We said when he was drafted, he's a Michael Johnson type.
Yeah.
But, you know.
They feel like, you know, in conversations that we've had, I mean, they feel like they're gaining a first-round pick in Will Clark this year because he'll come back. He's going to be at 290 up from 270 in theory, and he'll be more of that body type. And maybe he is that guy. Maybe he comes in and does make that instant impact. I don't know that that's a chance that you can take when it's 2015 and everybody's up.
right. Including the head coach.
Including the head coach. Yeah. And the money flips on the quarterback. So you're talking about it has that – maybe this is the year that you need to get the guy that makes the instant impact, and you got to make sure that you figure out that pass rush.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I just – I don't see him doing it.
Yeah.
But I do see him doing – I see a slew of Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis signings.
Right.
You know, and their best signings, and this was something I was going to write about today, you know, like their five best, and you might have already done this in the past, but their five best free agent signings have not been mega deals. They've been, the number one has got to be Bobby Williams.
Right.
Who is your classic tier B guy. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I think we can have this guy, but clearly Bobby's the first guy. And then after that, this is a long time ago now, but it's still, I think, it was in the guts of that 05, 09 run made up. You know, Thornton, I think, was a guy that has to be in that mix. Now, he was probably higher than a tier B signing. He got a lot of money. That was Marvin's first year. But Torrey James was a tier B signing, and he was, granted, Torrey had his issues, but he was had a hell of a lot of interceptions here and played on some good teams and helped turn it around.
I guess it's of the matter of who those guys are and where they fill, and I think you know, with this group, you know, the tight end position is interesting to me, and let's explore the tight end position and where you would go from here, because I get a lot of questions, as I'm sure you do too, about, okay, with tight end they should go get another guy because he has this many receptions and this many touchdowns, and I think the more that we talk to people and the more you look at it, that's not what they want. You got to understand what this team is and what it does best and how it will win. Hugh Jackson has said for a long time, and he proved it last year, this team will win by running the football. They need a tight end that can line up and knock the snot out of people and be a run-blocking tight end that has some nice hands and can make – I mean, anybody that's playing tight end in this league can make some catches for you. But they don't need him to be that. They have one of the best hands in the game, and Tyler Eifert on the other side. They obviously have a lot of worries about if he will be able to still play at his durability, but that's a question for another day.
Right.
You got to at some point just say he's going to be healthy. Lining up you can get a great deal in a run blocking tight end because there aren't a lot of teams that are interested in such things.
They need a young Alex Smith.
They do.
And if not, then they better go get Alex Smith.
Yeah.
who's my age.
Right.
So, but they're out there. Mm-hmm. And believe me, Hughes looked at him, and Hughes looking for a certain kind of tight end. You know, we sat with him for a while in Indy. You know, he wants a mean man to play tight end.
He does.
Okay. You know, it's not going to be a fancy dancy basketball player out of SMU or something. It's going to be damn near a tackle.
Yes.
And if they can't get the guy, you know, they'll bring a tackle in here to play that position. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you're right. We're not, and I'm not, you know, looking at the names. I mean, you know, you could probably. It depends. See, the tough thing about free agency, where people want to project all these names. Well, what do the coaches want?
Yes.
You know what?
It's all about fit. It's not about name or money. Right. It's about fit. And people are willing to pay for guys that fit exactly what they need.
Now, I think Anthony Fasano would be a Hugh guy.
Right.
I think he's a tough guy and all that. But he's also 30. Mm-hmm. So, he's going to be on his third deal. How many 30, 31-year-old guys are going to be sticking their mucker in there? You know, who knows?
You want a guy on his first deal, his second contract after his rookie contract, a guy who's 26, 27, who's willing to just be a mean Gus.
Yeah, there. And that's why the Jacoby Jones thing, and I love Jacoby Jones, but he's going to be 31 in July, and I love the man, but he caught 9 balls last year.
Yep.
And you already got a great return guy in Adam Jones, although I think Jones would be a great – I mean, Jacoby would clearly – they're trying to get Brandon Tate off the team. I love Brandon Tate, but he's trying to graduate, I think. You know, because they thought he was a Band-Aid when they got him off waivers. They thought he was a Band-Aid. I think he's been terrific. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
I think Brandon's been good, but obviously they're trying to move on from him.
Yeah.
And Jones would be an upgrade. Jacoby would be an upgrade. But how much are you going to pay for a guy that's going to be your fifth wide receiver – and return kicks. And,
that's my point. When you talk about the receiver discussion,
yeah.
is this just seems just a perfect fit for a couple of draft picks. You've got your top for this year. You have your top three or four, depending on how you view James Wright. You have your top three for this year's set. Now, you need somebody right behind that because all three of them are up after this year.
That's right. That's exactly right.
And you can't pay all three.
No, right.
Not what their market value will be.
That's why you got to get one of those guys
now on the first 2 days of the draft. In my opinion, I think day two of this draft has to produce a receiver because and I wrote about this weekend. The receiver position is so interesting when you look at the long run with this team. Yeah. A, the conversation about A.J. Green. Yeah. Are you willing to pay the money it will take to keep A.J. Green? Or you'll be eating a franchise tag possibly next year or eating the front load of a giant contract.
Yeah.
How willing are you to pay? Or would you pay Marvin Jones and Mohamed Sanu and then you'd have money left over?
Yeah.
You could pay both of those guys and let I mean, this is going to be blasphemy here and let A.J. Green hit the open market. But, I mean, you got to ask yourself that question.
Yeah.
Regardless, the money is too big for all those, so you need to get somebody that you know can produce. And if you look at what happened last year, and this draft is not quite last year, but it's pretty close to it, of what's going to be available, day two, you will get guys that will produce for you this year.
Yeah.
This year, and they're going to be good. Yeah. And, I mean,
you might get a returner in there.
Absolutely can get a returner. And at the very least, you could get a fast guy who's a good returner who you can maybe turn into a good receiver in the back end of the draft, a la what James Wright was on the special teams aspect last year. I mean, there's a number of fast guys.
Yeah. But I think what they got to do, they're big free agent this year, they should say, you know, don't focus on the league, focus on your own club, get Marvin Jones sign up. The problem there, though, is they got to see how his feet are.
Right.
You know?
It's a big year. I think it's a really interesting. We talked a couple years back when we discussed Michael Johnson and Carlos Dunlap's situation because you said you just can't pay them all when you were looking at Geno, Michael, and Carlos. This is the same situation.
Yes,
it's AJ being the Geno in this. And then you have Sanu and Jones, and you can't pay them all. Right. One of them's got to go. Right. And so when you're talking about extensions, though, the only one you could really extend is AJ this year because there's still you have the 14 drops on Sanu. You wonder. I think there's still a wonder about Sanu unless you feel like you can get
crazy.
Him at a bargain.
You got to get him at all. The whole thing is the whole thing with Marvin Jones is get him now because then you're gonna have to pay $7 million for him.
If he goes and has a huge year
what
this
if he,
year,
what if he does what he did when he was a sophomore in his second year? What if he has 10 more touchdowns? He just became a $7 million a year player.
Right.
You know. You got to. That's what I think. That's why they could have got Mike Johnson before Geno even emerged. Mm-hmm. Who knows what they could have got Mike Johnson for maybe $5 million a year, $4.5 million a year. I mean, you got to go after him early, but then again, there's always something holding you back from getting him early. Maybe an injury, maybe like with Marvin, it was an injury. With Mo, it's the drops. But with Mo, you know what you got. The problem with Mo is he's obviously going to be the cheaper of the three because he's a slot guy.
Yeah.
That's what he is. He proved that he's not a 1,000 snap guy because he wore down the second half of the year.
Yep.
Now he's a guy you want to have and you'd like to have, but you could get him at a pretty good price, I would think, right now.
And that's the thing is if you then throw in a day two draft pick into that mix, you're definitely someone's gone. There's no doubt it's somebody's got to because that guy would just move up and slip. I mean, who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe the guy you draft ends up being like Jarvis Landry and you think he could even be a number one. And if you had a Landry type, a Marvin Jones, and a Mo Sanu, there's your receiving core, and you have now more money to spend elsewhere.
Yeah.
Again, fans get real angry with me when I talk about letting A.J. Green go.
Yeah, well, of course.
As you should.
Yeah.
But I think it's...
But it wouldn't be crazy.
It would not be crazy because at some points, the money has to distribute. And, I did this week, and I thought this was really interesting. We looked at last year's 2014 positional spending report by team. Okay, the teams with that spent the top 10 on receivers. Those 10 teams had 3 made the playoffs, 0 playoff wins. The 10 teams in the bottom 10 had six teams make the playoffs. Five of them won games there. And the only reason they didn't all win games there is because the Ravens and the Steelers were both among the group and they knock each other out. Right. Two of them were Green Bay and Seattle. Yeah. Now, the common denominator everyone will point to you is say, well, yeah, because they have great quarterbacks. And there are plenty of good quarterbacks with good, that Matt Stafford, Peyton Manning last year was amongst the top 10 in receivers paid. Yeah. Matt Ryan had very expensive receivers and couldn't win because why? Didn't have enough of the supporting cast around them.
Right, right.
And guess what? Because the Detroit, because they played Calvin Johnson, guess who they're not going to be able to pay in a couple of days? Right. Ndamukong Suh.
Right.
Which one's more important to winning football games?
Right.
Now, there's just, you have to be thinking in that big picture. Right. If you're going to, A.J. Green will, would probably get the biggest non-quarterback contract in Bengals history.
No question.
When they sign him.
Yep.
It may even be close to something that they have given, maybe even in the Carson range, when you really talk about what they would pay for him.
Right.
And at a position where where guys are just turning up in the third round.
I know.
You know, and having huge, huge years.
Yeah.
And it's just, it makes everyone wonder.
Yeah, and it's not, and it doesn't all go back to the quarterback either.
No.
You know, I mean, there are some young guys have blossomed without good quarterbacks.
Yes.
I mean, I also think the other end of this thing too is, and Hugh talked about this a little bit, is, if you're going to be a smash mouth team, if you're going to play the way the Bengals are going to play offensively, then you have to help your defense.
Mm-hmm.
Because the reason they were able to play like that under Zimmer is they were going against, they were a top 10 defense, and you could play like that. If your defense is going to be number 22 like it was this year, you can't. You have to help your defense.
Yes.
In free agency and in the draft.
Yes.
So, you talk about big picture.
Big picture is what's going to, how's this team going to win?
Yeah.
Running in defense.
Right.
Under the current construction. Because let's be honest.
Right.
As much as anybody loves Andy Dalton, I think we all know where that stands.
Right.
Running the ball in defense is going to make Dalton better, and it's going to be how this team thrives.
It's how this team has thrived. How his Dalton has thrived.
Yeah. And so under that pretense, if you're saying the top two ways that you'll win is running in defense, and you're going to pay the biggest chunk of cash that you have to something that's not that.
Right.
I don't know how you back that up.
Yeah. No, it's a conundrum because he's also your best player.
He is.
So what are you saying when you let your best guy walk? I mean, and he is, he's bailed his team out of a lot of problems. You know,
no doubt.
They were killing themselves in Baltimore, and he ran away from the guy and won the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and but there's also, and he'll tell you this too. He has, as much as Dalton gets ripped for not coming through in the playoffs, AJ has struggled in big games and in the playoffs as much as Dalton has.
And it's become more of a conversation in the last couple years than it ever has been. I mean, I think he went from being viewed as invincible to kind of being put on the fire a little bit, not just outside the building, but maybe even inside it a little bit.
Certainly when you have a turnover like that against Pittsburgh, because let's face it, people want to blow this thing up and say, oh, my God, there's – 1 year left, or it's curtains. Yeah, last season came down to two turnovers against Pittsburgh that if they do not turn the ball over, who knows if they win, but they at least split.
Right.
And then where are you? And then how are we looking at it if they win the division? And then how are you looking at this team if they win the division without all those guys who are hurt?
Isn't it a situation where it's not curtains because they don't have the talent now? It's curtains because they won't have the talent in 2016.
Right. Yeah. Oh, no, right.
Because what are you going to do?
Right. Yeah. Right.
I mean, there's only so much money that you have.
You can only pay so many.
Then you start relying. Then these young guys. Then what has to happen at that point is what has happened previously, which is your draft picks start paying off.
Right.
And let's be honest. That's what it is. It's Marcus Hunt. It's Will Clark.
Yeah.
It's
Eifert.
It's Denard. It's all of these guys have to start becoming your stars. And if when you don't have the quarterback like the Aaron Rodgers type or any of those top 10, you can't miss.
Right.
You can't miss on half of your draft class because that's the only way that you could really do it.
If you're not going to be active in the first week of free agency, and we have seen that, as you have proven in some of the tables that you've done, it's not, free agency is not the answer.
No.
It's a combination of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And The other thing, too, and you kind of touched on it, is the quarterback's clock is ticking.
It is.
And you talk about if they might just come, reach a point and say, look, we're not going to pay that. Then they're really starting from scratch. You know what I mean? And you don't want to be there. That's the last place you want to be, is looking for a quarterback in this league, because even as this franchise has sort of 10 years in the 10 years in the valley of death.
Yes.
And so, at any point, you want to avoid that, and that's going to be the most interesting thing to watch, is how much you're going to be willing to how much you're going to be willing to pay this guy if this is all you got.
Some of the numbers on Dalton and his contract situation. I'll just run down some of these because it's just it's a reality check is what it is. I mean, when you go from he doesn't save you anything this year against the cap, so he's obviously safe.
Right.
Next year, you start looking at, you could save $3 or $5 million, and you start getting for that. Then we're looking at $10 million you would save against the cap if you let any – I mean, that's the point where you have to know.
Right, yeah.
And you have to start planning for that. And,
right, yeah.
I mean, it's the gorilla in the room, and it will be it will be until anything changes. I mean, until this team wins a playoff game or really makes any kind of run.
I don't see his replacement here.
No. You know, I don't see his replacement anywhere where the Bengals have access to it.
Yeah, right. I mean, so maybe – maybe they're building the team the right way, but instead of talking receivers and the money, we got to be talking about defensive end. We got to be talking about what's Burfict's future.
Yes,
You know, I mean,
a very interesting conversation. See, I want to do this. I do want to bring in. I'm gonna bring in a conversation that we had in Indianapolis at the combine with Hugh Jackson, and just bring you about 5-10 minutes of him talking about Andy Dalton, talking about the running game, and a number of interesting pieces that are in play and the type of player and players that he's trying to find here over the next few months. So here's a little bit of Hugh Jackson from the NFL Combine.
Did last year's wide receiver draft class, and this one maybe not as good, but pretty darn good, open people's eyes to the fact that maybe draft is the way to go with receiver, in particular as a position?
I think so. I think that's might be true throughout football. You know, normally the guys who are, from a free agency standpoint, that change teams don't play as well, in my opinion. And that's just my opinion. I'm not saying I'm right. It's just what I feel and haven't been involved in it. I think when you draft a guy and you put him on your football team and you raise him and you coach him, I think, you know, you normally get more out of it as opposed to the free agency part. But at the same time, this draft over the last couple years, as you mentioned, has just been strong at that position. So it looks like the same is happening this year.
Since 2000, Bengals have drafted two wide receivers under 6 feet, Warwick and Shipley. Does he have to be big, or can he just be fast?
He has to be a playmaker and fast is what I like for him to be. I don't think it's about size. We have big guys already. You know, if you look at AJ Green and Marvin Jones and Mosa New and James Wright and the guys that are on our team, they're big guys. You know, I'm looking for a great football player if we do decide to go that way, who can give us something that we don't already have. You know, we have some very talented players at the spot, but again, I don't think you can ever have too many playmakers. I mean, that was shown, you know, as our season wound down last year, we kind of lost, you know, some battles in that area because we were kind of short, you know, ended up on the short end of the stick. And it was a very uncommon year for injuries, but at the end of the day, that can happen to you, and it did.
When you look at the tight end position, do you get concerned with durability, with Tyler in particular? And needing to have an influx of backups because there's been a history of that with him, including last year?
Yeah. I mean, yes, it is. I mean, because we, you know, he played whatever it was, a quarter for us a year.
Eight snaps.
And then, you know, I know he missed a game the year before. So, I mean, again, you want guys that are going to be there and be dependable. Not that I don't think he's trying to be. I just think that's just been the luck of the draw for him, you know. And so... it was unfortunate what happened to Marvin. It was unfortunate what happened to any of our guys got injured. But you know, as a coach, you know, you want every bullet you can to be out there, but you also understand injuries are going to happen, and you have to overcome them, and you have to play the best you can. But is it concerning? Yes, it is.
Can and you don't know, obviously, Gresham is an unknown because he's a free agent. Can Hewitt, would you be able to line up with Hewitt and Eifert as your first team tight ends?
Well, Hewitt is our fullback, so I'm not going to, I mean, we have to do what we need to do to, you know, see wherever this situation goes with Jermaine. Obviously, Hewitt has the ability to play, you know, at tight end, and he's done it and done well. But again, we're trying to get better, you know, at everywhere, you know, the places that we feel that maybe we need to continue to add some more depth. But and that's one of the positions that I think we need to continue to grow at and get better because, one, of the injury, and, two, we have a player that we're talking about that may not, you know, be on our football team. So, again, it's, you know, those are some things we need to keep addressing as we move forward.
Would you prefer to leave Hewitt at fullback?
I prefer to let Hewitt do what he did, which is play all over the place, you know, and I think he gives us that flexibility that he can put his hand down and line up in line. He can line up in the backfield, line up outside. He did a lot of different things for us, so, and he was a pleasant, you know, surprise for us and did a great job. But to me, what happens, you start stunting a guy's growth, you know, when all of a sudden you say, well, you just got to do this, you know, for the year, when here's a guy that did a lot of different things for us and had a tremendous contribution to our offensive football team. So I want him to keep growing as he has. If it means he has to do it a little bit more, fine. But at the same time, there's some other things he did a great job at, being in the backfield and lead blocking for us, that I think we need to continue to have him grow at that spot.
When we met here last year, we were talking about your relationship with Andy, and you were you were anticipating it. You really were welcoming it and what you could do. Mm-hmm. How do you think that relationship went, and how do you think you did it from a coach-player standpoint in developing that?
I think my relationship with Andy is as strong as it's ever been. That being said, I don't think, and I'll be first to tell all of you, that I don't think I did a good enough job of getting him to where I think he needs to be. And that's one of my biggest responsibilities in my mind this upcoming year. I think he played well at times, and I think there's times where there was inconsistency, and I got to get him over that hump. I was disappointed with our season, regardless of who played for us at the end, you know, because what I set out to do, we didn't do. We rushed the ball better, which I told you guys we would do, so we accomplished that goal, but we didn't throw the ball as well as I think we could. And regardless of what the factors were for why it happened that way, it doesn't matter. It didn't happen. So we have to go back to the drawing board, and we got to get better at throwing the football. And I think a lot of that is starts with me and the rest of our coaches. And then it goes down to the players, and the players have to accept that responsibility as well. But, and I think they will. And I'm looking forward to getting back to work with these guys as soon as we can.
You mentioned it earlier. Hugh knows what he wants.
He wants
mean people.
Yeah.
He wants someone that's going to come in and be physical and not be afraid to establish his identity that they started to really create by the end of last year. But I think how much do you make of the second year under the coordinator making a big difference?
Yeah,
I think that's a big one.
I do, too. You know, the biggest mystery to me last year is the better they ran the ball, the worse Dalton got. And I could not, that did not make any sense to me.
No.
Because I thought things were going around fairly well. First year for a coordinator, I thought, until the Tampa game, I thought it was pretty much, you know, except for the Cleveland game, which was, you know, that was just awful. A once in a lifetime. But you take away that game, and then what he did against New Orleans and Houston on the road, and then in Tampa, okay, he threw three picks. But he was still steadied himself, won the game. But then the last three games of the year, he was just, well, you know, it's hard to say because Pittsburgh, he played well, but he made the one turnover. Against Cleveland, he was terrible. Against Denver, he wasn't much better. And, you know, Pittsburgh, he didn't get heated up until the third quarter.
Right.
But in all those games, he ran the ball well.
Yes.
You know, you would have thought he would have been.
How easy does it have to be for you is the question everyone's saying.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I thought Hugh had it the way he wanted it. They got to December, and he did what they wanted to do, was run the ball and take the heat off the kid, and it just didn't happen. So To me, that's the question is, geez, they ran the ball and his numbers got worse. So, but I do agree with you. I do think I think Andy now has a better understanding of what he wants. He's been in it for a year. So I think he'll just get better just because of that. And I also think he'll just, you know, Marvin Jones and Tyler Eifert makes him a lot better too.
No doubt. I mean, I think he needs his weapons, but I think you can't just step in as a coordinator and say, we're going to run the ball and be physical and have one off season and be able to establish what you truly want. I just think another off season of people knowing exactly what to expect and him learning from some of the mistakes that he made and how he evaluated some guys. I mean, particularly you look at, I think everyone has to feel great coming in knowing where the running back rotation is going to be, what it is, where they think they finally figured out how that works. And just being able to, like we talked about, finding the type of Hugh Jackson person that needs to be in. Guys respond differently to a guy like Hugh. Some people don't like it. Some people go in a shell and can't handle it. Some people thrive under it. He now knows, I think, who a lot of those guys are and can replace those that weren't able to do it.
Yeah, well, you know, we'll see how Andy responds.
Right.
You know, and I think Andy will respond all right. I mean, I think he's a...
I just think he'll be who he's been.
Yeah, yeah. I think he almost enjoys being the... he almost enjoys being the guy getting ripped on.
Yeah.
Because they never thought he would be any kind of a player at TCU.
Right.
I think he kind of thrives on that a little bit. Remember, we had... you probably heard the discussion where he was talking about... he was talking about the heat that he gets. And I told him, I said, well, you don't have to worry about it. I'm the most hated guy, and I'm the guy that gets the most heat. And he looked at me, and he said, really? Yeah, you know, and he was, you're right. I said, I kind of, you're right. That's not, true.
People might have a little more vitriol for you.
But they do. But he does take a lot of heat.
He does.
But, boy, it doesn't seem to bother him. And maybe that's part of the problem. Maybe some people would like to see him get mad.
Yeah.
You know?
Where's the fire?
Yeah.
And I mean, I think everyone will talk about that. But I think that I'm big more than anything, though. I think a second year will be great for Paul Gunther.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
That was his first coordinator gig. Yeah. I mean, it was a big jump for him. Yeah. And I think, you know, and talking to him at the end of the year when he was pretty much put everyone on blast. No man was safe in that room.
No.
And
to his credit, he did not back off in Indianapolis.
No, he didn't. Didn't have any regrets towards anything that he said, whether it be about Geno Atkins or anybody else.
He took a lot of heat for that. He took a lot of that heat in this building and and elsewhere.
He did.
Yep.
He absolutely did, where people were wondering what the hell he's doing.
Yeah.
But I think he now has a better feel for who will respond to him and how he should approach things differently. He's talked a lot with us about wanting to give more run to the reserves in not only the offseason program but in preseason to make sure that they're ready, because you're going to need them. He felt like he had a bunch of guys, and I think in the back end of his room, that weren't prepared
when it came time
the bullets were flying and guys went down. That was evident at linebacker in particular, where they were just obliterated by injuries and having to pick guys up off other teams' practice squads and start 2 weeks later. I mean, it's just no offense to Nico Johnson, it's unfair.
Right.
I mean, at some point, I think it's really important for him to know what type of players he wants and how he will handle being the coordinator and how to do it more efficiently. I think everybody still really believes in Paulie, but let's be honest. I mean, if it came out and it was a second straight season where they end up 22nd again in defense, his seat warms up.
Yep, that's right. You know, and I think, too, he was pretty honest about his evaluation of linebackers. He thought everyone was going to be a perfect. He could don't worry about it. We won't draft one.
Right.
We'll just make one. You know, and it worked with Tez, but you know, Lemieux is a great athlete, and but clearly, I think they thought he was going to be another Tez. I think they thought he was going to be a Tez who was a great cover guy. Mm-hmm. But I think really he's probably just a nickel backer.
Yeah,
he's a pretty good nickel backer, but he's not he's not Tez.
No.
And so they've kind of scaled that back, you know, that thinking back, and they're going to have to draft some people, you know, and like you said, you can't miss on one, and you can't get a guy hurt. and Sean Porter, a third-round pick who they really had high hopes on, never saw him. Never saw
one
him.
One snap.
And we'll never see him.
Well, unless you watched his one snap. Did you watch his one snap?
I didn't. I have to. Honestly,
I have to admit, I did because I wanted to see if he'd survive it, and he didn't.
And he did not. It was on a kickoff. It was a kickoff. Yeah, right.
It was a kickoff. He came out there. He was all excited, and midway through, there he was. It was honestly impossible. You couldn't ride it.
So you never even saw him. You never even saw him shed a block on second and five, and you never saw him cover a running back on third and eight. So
you don't know.
You don't know. But they obviously need to draft another guy. Pretty high, and Lemieux is going to have to go a ways to prove that he's a three down player. Right now he's a nickel guy, and I think that was the problem last year. Probably was they had too many role players playing too many snaps.
You're exactly right. I'm glad you brought up Paulie. I want to bring in him. I want to bring in our conversation with Paulie from the combine, where he went to a couple of things that you talked about, and other things about kind of adjusting to his first year as a coordinator. So here was defensive coordinator Paul Gunther at the NFL Combine.
How challenging is tracking linebackers under the same premise? Because these guys are made for different systems. You don't see them do what you need them to do. With the same thing with the linebacker, right? It's very similar.
Yeah, you know, coming from the linebacker room, you know, I was always one to say, let's make sure we get the corners and the rushers. And I always said, if we can hold off on the linebacker, we may be able to get a guy later in the draft or even a free agency. A lot of times, you know, we've done a pretty good job of finding a guy after the draft. We've come in, you develop a guy after a year, he's going to play. So, but, you know, we need to take a serious look at that because, you know, with the things that happened this year with, you know, Vontaze and then Ray and then, you know, E-Man was really his first year starting. So we really got to look to bolster that group. So
there's probably more urgency for that position in the draft than maybe any since you've been here.
Yeah. Because, you know, and it's probably my own fault because I was a position coach at the time and I always said, just wait till after the draft, I'll find somebody that we can get. And,
yeah.
We got Vinny was one of them, you know, E-Man, Vontaze, and all of them. But if you can get guys like, to me, in the draft, if you can win in rounds 5, 6, 7 in free agency, to me that makes your draft, in my opinion. Everybody knows, you know, everybody's going to have their mock draft, the first, second, you know, maybe even to the third round. But when you get past that, you know, when you're in the last day in the free agency, to me, if you can pick up a couple guys who can make your roster, that's where you make hay.
Right.
Do you have maybe two edge rushers in waiting? Maybe they're already in the building in Hunt and Clark. I guess you're still waiting for them to.
Well, you develop. Know, Marcus was coming on last year until he got hurt. He was out for about 6 or 7 weeks. So I mean, it's just, you know, you get him going, and then if he's down. You know, we knew took taking Will. Will was going to be a guy that, hey, he, you know, necessary to come in here and start right away, but he wanted to develop him into that kind of guy. So yeah, we're looking for big things for those guys. But you can never have enough. Just like you can have enough good corners. You like to have waves of guys that going in there, you know?
Speaking of, with your corners, how big of a year is this going to be for Dre, Darquez? It's almost like these two guys, you know, it's their time to really step up. Enough of the other guys are ahead of them.
Yeah, I mean Dre stepped up at the end of the year last year. I thought he played good. He's really come on. His biggest thing is just being consistent every day with the way he approaches work every day, because he's got the ability. That's no question. He's just got to be consistent, and he's really matured a lot in the last year. Dre has, I think, and you know, I think him having some success at the end of the year last year will help him move forward. Darquez, you know. I should have got him on the field more, but it was tough. You have Leon, you have Pack, you have Terrence, you know. But sometimes it's good to be around those guys for a year to learn really what it's like to do it. So I'm really high on Darquez, and I think he's going to compete this year. So,
How hard was it to learn what he can actually do, though? Could you tell that in practice enough, or do you feel like you have to see him under the light?
We knew it before we took him.
Yeah.
We went to Michigan State, we saw him here. We went to his pro day. We spent time. We did everything we found out about the kid when he came to our place. Everything was true. So, Darquez just needs to play. He just needs to get in there and go.
Yeah.
And, you know, we need to get him in there early in the preseason against the best players, you know, the first string guys, put him out there. And that's, you know, one of the things that you know, I always say that, but yeah, I got to remind myself, is when you get into the preseason, yeah, it's about building chemistry as a defense, but you got to find if these two guys are kind of tight, can this guy do it?
Yeah.
And put him out there and see if he can do it against good guys. Don't put him in there with guys are going to get cut.
Right.
You know,
right.
So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with that position, I mean, however it ends up, whoever ends up being in the cornerback room, I imagine you're just going to put them all out there and say, compete, because you've got so many guys, and there's like, you know, there's not necessarily a hierarchy like there has been in the past.
There's no hierarchy in every year. I mean, yeah. You know, there were some incumbent guys who's got, you know, guys were coming back, but this year, I'm gonna, you know, everyone, it's open season, it's open, jobs are open.
Yeah.
You know,
so. Open season at corner or everywhere?
Everywhere. Everywhere.
More so than usual?
Oh, no, but I mean, safety, that's how we every position's like that. Safety, corner, linebacker.
Yeah.
So, up front, you know, everything. But I mean, particularly your corners, you asked, is that, yeah, those guys, there's some good players there.
Yeah.
And the best guys are going to play. Whoever can help us win. If it's 50, 60 snap, 10 snaps, whatever it is, you know. But Dark West needs to play some.
Yeah.
So there it is. I mean, you talk about, you know, the whole line. I think when you talk about the linebacker situation, which, you know, as you mentioned, you talk about needing to draft guys higher and be more active. You look at what this team has dedicated resources in the draft to linebackers and defensive line. First couple of days, it's nearly non-existent. You've had Hunt and Dunlap. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, all of their guys have come from third, fourth, fifth.
Right.
In that entire front seven, which it makes remarkable what they were able to accomplish from 11 through 13 with that, with all those guys. It's amazing, and a credit to Mike Zimmer and everybody that's on staff here. But at some point, you need to just say, hey, we're going to use our top picks on something that's not just this, you know, a corner or an offensive lineman or whatever this team typically dedicates it to. I think you got to get it. You got to have a veteran linebacker, and you got to have a day one or two linebacker come out of this free. And I think you feel okay then.
Yeah.
If you come back with Tez and whatever he'll be, if you can re-sign Ray, I think I think re-signing Ray is pretty viable.
I think that's accepted. I think that's kind of accepted as
yeah.
I don't think they see him going anywhere, and I don't think this team sees itself signing anybody else.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if they do, it'd be somebody to help them.
Right.
You know.
So you're talking Maluga, perfect. Lemure comes back. They'll have a tender offer on him.
Yeah.
And then you have Vinny Ray, who was Mr. Do-It-All, save everybody's butt last year.
The fourth linebacker.
And then add two more guys. You draft a guy, and
yeah,
maybe have another vet.
Yeah.
And I think you feel like you've solidified that room. And I don't think it costs you that much.
Right. No, that's right.
I think it's a pretty easy
fix. Veteran
and
a rookie. I think a veteran and a rookie.
Veteran and a rookie and re-sign Maluga.
Yeah. And I also think, too, Paulie, that the you know, keep an eye on that rehab by Perfect, because I think they have to act like he's not going to be back.
Yeah.
You know, I think they have to do the PUP factor, you know, first 6 weeks of the season. I think they have
it's
to
possible,
keep that in
for
mind.
Sure.
So, I mean, all the more reason to get a veteran or a rookie.
To be aggressive with a guy
yeah.
who knows how to, with some skins on the wall.
You can't act like you already got your first four guys here until you sign Ray, certainly. You got to act like you're signing two starters.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So let's see: offense, defense. We covered special teams. I think we ran the gamut.
I think we always do. We always do.
That's the thing. We could do this for three more hours.
Yeah,
because there's so many positions and ins and outs. I mean, about everything. I mean, it's gonna be a really interesting, telling couple of weeks. I think to the month of March. I think we'll learn a lot about how this team views its own urgency.
Yeah.
I think we will. Yeah. And see and plug where they plug what they need into place. Or if they feel like the pieces are here.
Yeah. You know, we're talking about a guy, too. You know, Mike Brown turns 80 in August.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody talks about a window this and a window that. You know, Mike wants to win a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You know? And I remember, you know, so that's something that you have to keep in mind, too. There's some urgency there. And I think, too, that
and he sees the – I mean, he knows the balance books. He knows the balance sheet.
Yeah.
He sees the books.
Yeah, right.
He knows what – he knows that
he
after
wants
this
to do
year
it his
a lot
way.
Changes.
You know, he wants to do it his way, and I think he's – I think he's had a pretty good handle on it, you know. And it's that, you know, he's tried it any number of ways. He's tried the big free agent.
Mm-hmm.
He's tried the the last gasp, Terrell Owens, right before training camp. So he's done some things. He's been through the mill, and it's going to be interesting to see how he sets it up. Another thing too, and I should have brought this up earlier, was, you know, they hate to give up the draft picks as compensation. You know, the guys, and this is why Jacoby Jones is interesting guy. A.J. Hawk is entries. These guys are cut.
Yep.
So if they do sign him, they don't count against the compensatory picks, you know?
Exactly.
So that's something to keep an eye on too. But I wonder, I think that this is a year where that might go by the boards a little bit, that if they could...
Well, because, I mean, what you say, if you look at it and say, okay, what's the most they could lose? They with Gresham and Bowling, and yeah, if you lost Maluga, yeah, none of those guys are going to be warranting probably a third or a fourth round in compensation. So you might as well just go ahead and be aggressive, which is the opposite last year. You knew you were losing two guys, that Michael, who's going to get you a third round pick, and AC, who might end up getting you a fourth round pick, depending on how that shakes out at the owners' meetings.
Right.
So, I mean, that was why you had to stay off and just focus on guys that were cut.
Yeah.
So, you know, that always comes into play, because how valuable is that third-round pick look right now in a deep draft?
Ooh.
I mean, that's one of these day-two picks we talk about, where they have four picks in the first 2 days where they're going to make their hay, and that's a lot of that is because they were calm last year, let Michael leave, and didn't try to replace it with some big-name free agent.
Right, right. That's why I still think we're going to see a lot of guys people probably haven't heard of, but are probably going to fit in and do exactly what they want him to do. A lot, like I said, a lot of Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis signings.
Yeah, yeah. Don't groan, fans.
who for 2 years did what he was supposed to do. He was productive.
Except the guy who never fumbles came here and fumbled. was the oddest thing. But that's just because the balls were deflated in Boston.
I think that's right.
That's all it was. It's because over there, they had all the balls were easy to hold on to. Then he came here. He's like, what is this full inflated football? Yeah. I don't know how to use it.
Yeah, right.
So,
that's probably true.
Well, we'll get out of here. Now, I know in the past, We've picked some classic songs that you've always had a pretty good song on the mind.
Yeah,
I feel like something about something in the. Do you have anything on the mind today?
I'm a little bit, you know, because it's free agency, and I know we've already gone out once with Lion Eyes.
We have
during the draft, but it's to me that one line in that song sums up free agency for both the player and the team. Is every form of refuge has its price?
It does.
I mean, to me, that
really does
sums it up for both sides.
Both sides. I think for everybody.
I think you just have to. Yeah, I hate to wheel it up, but it's one of the great top five songs in the American language.
And so I feel like it's sort of your theme song a little bit. It's like anytime you come on and decide to join the podcast, that's what we need to do. We need to break out your theme song. It's like your entrance music. If you were a WWE wrestler, that's what you would come out to. It'd be weak.
It would be weak. And I can't.
But that's okay.
But why is it? Maybe I'm. There's something wrong with me that's my song. I'm disturbed.
But it's
about six great lines in there that you wish you could have written, and they did.
Absolutely.
And well, I don't think Jack would mind.
No,
it kind of fits Jack.
No, JFK. He's familiar with refuge.
Yeah.
Needing some refuge.
I guess he went to the cheating side of town a few times.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
Allegedly. You have no proof.
Sorry, Jack. Just joking around there, Jack.
Oh, man. Well, congrats to you and your boy. Speaking of where you came from up in Boston, your boy David Blatt, you're very close with, has survived the heat of the middle of the early part
thought
of
he was
the
gone.
Season.
Thought
Everyone
he
thought
gone.
He was gone, but you're a guy, because you went to high school with David
was,
Blatt. And so it should be known, though. How many times have you gone to see his team play?
In the regular season, it's been three times now.
Three times.
0-3.
0-3.
Big. Now, I did see him win over here at Xavier.
Yes.
But that was an exhibition game.
Did they win?
They did win.
No. That doesn't really
But
it was count,
an exhibition game.
It was an exhibition game.
I told him the last time I saw him, I said, the last time I saw you play and win was when we beat Quincy in the South Sectional Semis. He just shook his head.
Yeah, well, you know, he's survived it. Now the Cavs are rolling, you will not be invited to the finals.
No, I will not. actually, my wife sent me to the concourse in the fourth quarter Friday night against Indy, and that did not help.
It didn't help. Well, no. It would have helped if 23 would have come off the bench.
That's what I was going to tell Sarah. I said, "Listen, I wasn't the pilot of the plane that they were on. They were on the tarmac." And I told him, actually, I said, "I got a better airplane story in Cleveland." I was telling him that the Bengals played in Cleveland about 10 years ago. The plane, after an 18-0 whacking of the Browns. Mm-hmm. In the Butch, I think it was right before Marvin got here. It was 0-2. Plane did not get off the ground and had to be bussed back to Cincinnati. Not a good 4 hours. So
that's a long bus ride.
Oh boy, guys were trying to break $100 bills at Venville, at the stops at the rest stops.
Did I ever tell you the ATM that's right by the security office and right by on the way to the locker room when you walk in there? If you've ever gone to that ATM, I had a number of times where it doesn't dispense anything smaller than $100 bills. If there's anything that tells you that you are not on the same level as the guys you are covering, it is that you go to the ATM and it can only give you hundreds.
Only time I've seen a $100 bill is probably a Monopoly.
Yeah. Well, Butchie, I appreciate you again joining us. It's always a pleasure.
Paulie, congratulations on your endeavors, and I know we're all looking forward to the wedding.
Oh, everyone's looking forward to the wedding. June 20th. So
It's a Cincinnati royal wedding.
Yes, it is. Well, it's funny, when I was talking to Duke, he said June 20th. All right, well, we'll make sure that we sign that extension for AJ Green that day. I said, I would go down in Bengals scribe lore if I took the break, because it's right next door is where the wedding is. If I took the break between the ceremony and the reception and came over here and covered an AJ Green extension presser, I would be legendary. They'd put my picture up in the
A lot of us will be there. A lot of us will be there.
That's true. So, we'll all be coming over.
So they may be trying to sneak one in on us. But
they know that's the day to do it. That's the day to do it. So, yeah, it'll be great. So, but we'll have, of course, everything on Cincinnati.com and on Bengals.com. You can catch all of our coverage leading up to and through free agency. And if you want to see anyone in pain, just come look at us in our office, bang our heads against the wall for the next 2 weeks as we try to track every single free agent plane that's flying somewhere and every agent who's blowing us off and smoke screening and everything that's going to it's going to be a crazy, crazy mess.
The problem is still sign somebody and we'll be running an errand. We'll be getting our car washed. It will be on a Saturday. It will be on a Sunday. It will be on a Thursday at 9 o'clock at night. I mean, it never happens.
And then 2 hours after that, Pac-Man will be in a casino.
No. He's fine.
He's fine. It worked out. It turns out that you know, when you're not doing anything illegal, you get a little angry. The problem was the angry Instagrams is really where it all turned.
I think if he probably had to do it over again, he probably wouldn't have done that.
But
I mean, he didn't do it. But the bottom line is, he didn't do anything.
No.
To warrant the, you know, I mean, like I say, you and I have had this discussion before. The standard of getting in the news nowadays, is it's not much.
It's not much, especially if your name's Adam Jones.
It's unbelievable, or Bill O'Reilly.
Or Bill O'Reilly, he doesn't have much problem getting in the news.
No, he's nice stint over the Falklands.
Oh, that's great! All right, Butchie, thank you for joining us. I always appreciate having you on.
Thank you, Paulie.
We'll have to do it. We'll have to do it again. Maybe before or after the draft.
No question.
Like
we guys
that.
Will be on Bengals.com on video here in a couple weeks. So,
absolutely, looking forward to it. We're all sharing now. We're all together in this, because it's all it is. It's locals versus the nationals is what it is.
That's right.
We're like the Washington Senators in that scenario. Yeah. You know, or the Generals, I should say.
Yeah, we got no shot.
We got no shot. You heard it here first, folks. We got no shot, but we'll do our best to try to keep up. So thanks everybody for listening to Scribe Session. We'll have plenty more coming as the off season progresses. We look forward to catching up with you then. Thanks to JosephAuto.com for all they do for pushing all of our products out there. So, and hey, Lion Eyes coming your way. Beautiful. Because nothing has been truer. And it's Butchie's theme song. So enjoy that. Have a good day, everybody. City girls just seem to find out early how to open doors with just a smile. A rich old man, and she won't have to worry. She'll dress her up all in lace and go
She rushes to his arms.